that Freedom Rock intro means that it's time for Liberty on the Air. I'm Dan Fishman, your host. I'm in studio with Matt McLaughlin.
Good evening.
Hassel, and, of course, John Gabzo.
Hello, hello.
Producing from behind the glass. I hesitated there because sometimes I get John's name wrong, but I did it right this time.
Gabzo.
The gift of Gabzo. So, a lot of Liberty stuff in the news today. And this has been a pretty exciting week for Liberty. A few things I want to talk about, but I want to kick one thing off, and this is just sort of like a humanitarian plea. I was out petitioning, trying to get Walter Zubrio on the ballot. He's running for state senate in Watertown, Brighton, and Belmont. And we're at the Stop and Shop in Watertown, and two kids came out on break, and I'm standing by the front door trying to get signatures. One kid starts talking. He's like, yeah, my teeth are killing me. Our dental coverage is terrible. It's going to cost me $1,500 to get this fixed, and the pain's killing me. The other guy's like, yeah, man, it's the worst. He's like, yeah, can you sell me some pills? And the guy's like, oh, yeah, you know, I got everything you need. And they start going through a pretty in-depth conversation about opiates, what they're going to take. And the guy's saying, oh, yeah, you know, I'm already taking opiates, but what you got to be careful about is this, that, and the other thing. And it was just shocking to me. And I think that there's still this basic disconnect between most people in terms of understanding why people are using opiates, how it affects their lives, and how a lot of people who are using opiates and end up getting addicted are doing them so they can hold down their regular jobs and go to work every day and deal with pain that's in their lives that they can't deal with because either they don't have medical insurance or there's something else going on. And as a result, you know, they get hooked. And so I just want to make this general plea. Please understand the opiate epidemic is disastrous to our society right now. And the one thing that's proven to make a difference, because laws don't make a difference, right? Trump's idea that we're going to start killing drug dealers, I mean, you're going to have to start killing the CEO of SmithKline, Glaxo, Wellcome, Pfizer, Big Pharma, because they're the ones who are making most of the drugs that people are using. Are you going to start killing the parents whose, you know, either their prescriptions are stolen or the people who, you know, they get Vicodin? That's crazy. What really makes a difference, and it's been proven, is cannabis. In states where medical marijuana is legalized, opiate deaths dropped by 25%.
Do you not think this kid who was buying illegal opiates did not have access to marijuana?
I think that, I mean, it's an interesting question because it's still difficult to legally buy marijuana in Massachusetts. It's around.
This kid is already buying illegal drugs.
You're right. So he probably did have access. If it's commercially available, though, I think it's a lot easier decision for people to say, I can use that instead of buying something from a friend.
Oh, you're probably right. Like, I'm just...
Especially because if it's commercially available, there's going to be marijuana that's available that, you know, people
dental, can use dental for care pain. Dental care is commercially available for this kid
it
as well.
It is. It's very expensive. So he was going to...
I ended up having a conversation with him
talking about the fact, I'm like, hey, you know, you guys can go to Tufts School of Dentistry where they will save you money. And it's cheaper to do stuff like that. Incidentally, if people want to call in on this topic or anything that we're talking about, 617-266-6868, the big 6-8, easy to remember. We want to hear your conversations on this. And I don't want to go too long because we've done a lot of stuff.
I don't want to.
No, your point is
minimize,
very fair.
I'm just trying to be, you know, I'm just trying to give it up.
I don't know if it would have made a difference for these guys, but statistically, opiate deaths drop when cannabis is legalized.
Yeah, I'm not trying to.
No, it's
killing of the, you know.
It's a very fair point. And I mean, really, you know, it was, it's almost none of my business. But so full disclosure, I used to work at Stop and Shop. I worked in the deli, and I looked at these kids and I saw me, you know, 30 years ago, 35 years ago. I just thought, yeah, it's crazy. You know, it's just, I don't think people understand how addictive opiates are. And it, you know, it's one of the dilemmas for libertarians in that.
Did you get his signature?
I did not get his signature. He was not from Watertown. Oh, okay. He wasn't from the area. But, I mean, we actually had an interesting conversation where I talked about, you know, all these resources are available they didn't really know anything about.
Yeah, that's also another interesting point. There's other resources available besides just
Well, what if you
getting the kid off one drug and onto another?
If you live in Massachusetts and you need cheap dentistry, we have a ton of dentistry schools here that if you don't mind your procedure taking 3 hours, but it's only going to cost you $100, you can get that done. And that's really a great deal.
That is a great deal.
I have friends who've had a lot of dentistry work done that way. All right. Enough on opiates. I want to talk briefly about the president and his call to Russia, in which it's been widely reported that there were big letters saying, do not congratulate Putin. However,
we're talking big letters, believe me.
Yeah, and so the president, but the president did congratulate him. And we had a conversation beforehand where we talked about whether or not we think that's a big deal. So obviously in 2012, Obama congratulates Putin on being elected. I would argue that a lot of things have changed since then in our relationship with Russia. You know, the invasion of
Crimea. We had a reset. There was a button that was pressed, so we reset that, right?
Well, certainly, yeah. But there was sort of a reset in that things dramatically changed with the invasion of the Crimea. I mean, that changed everything. And then Syria.
Certainly did for the Light Brigade.
Yeah, exactly right. Into the Valley of Death were we, the Brave 600. The invasion of the Crimea, Ukraine. Syria, also the poisoning of the ex-spy in Britain. I mean, that's essentially attack
and potentially another
in England.
One, I believe, yeah.
Right, and then you know, it's clear that the Russians did have some impact on our election. So I understand the complaint of saying we shouldn't congratulate Putin on winning a non-election. But that's sort of an aside. The more important part is the fact this is something that was so incredibly secret. How did it possibly get out? I mean, now we know. It's almost certainly H.R. McMaster's 3-star general fired from being national security advisor. Of course, he's going to deny that he did it. But it just seems so likely that, you know, that's probably only 5 or 6 people saw this piece of paper. You know, the president and maybe a few others. And so the fact that that's leaking out, you see this administration shedding the people who have a history of public service, shedding the people who took the job, hopefully out of patriotic reasons, and being replaced with, are they yes men? I think maybe, I don't know. But it's one of the alarming things that seems to be happening right now, that Trump is feeling his oats, right? He got 2 big pieces of legislation passed. We're going to talk about one of them when we start talking about the omnibus. But he also, is working towards an agenda now that is specifically the Trump agenda, and the people who are advising him that that's wrong are being pushed out of the administration. Have other administrations in the past done that?
Never.
I think there's
never.
Certainly some
no
of that.
No one's ever done that.
But, well, you've never seen an administration have the same level of turnover, right?
No, probably not, no.
I mean, just in 1 year, I think there's been more turnover in the Trump administration than there was in the 8 years of the Obama administration. You know, sometimes at a four-year break, you'll see changes in people. Like Hillary Clinton was the first Secretary of State. John Kerry was the second Secretary of State. Stuff like that. But in general, to see somebody leave after 1 year from a senior administration, you know, to see the Secretary of State fired via tweet, to see, you know, the National Security Advisor fired, to see the head of the CIA changed, these are all pretty traumatic things. What does it mean? I mean, who knows what anything in this presidency is meaning. It means that we are still in a situation where our faith has to be in what the Constitution set up, the balance of powers, the idea that there is some level of checks and balances. And I don't know. I don't know when that will actually come into play. Nothing the president has done is illegal so far. But we have on the line a good friend of mine, chair of the Libertarian Party of Pennsylvania, Steve Sheets. Steve, thanks so much for calling in.
Hey, how you doing, Dan?
How's it going, Steve?
I didn't expect to be taken quite so quickly.
No problem. You want me to let you prep?
Huh?
I'm just making a joke.
Fair enough. No, I just wanted to talk a little bit about the New Jersey convention today.
Oh, how'd it go?
And It went really well.
The whole state of New Jersey had a convention?
The Libertarian Party of New Jersey had a convention.
Oh, I see.
And Libertarian superstars Justin O'Donnell and Jeff Lyons were there.
It was a really great event, and I have to say that everyone that was there was really welcoming to all of us, especially the people here who were at National and weren't really part of the party. You know, myself, Alex Merced from New York, Joe Hoffman, he's from Indiana. We were the vice chair candidates.
Mm-hmm.
Jess Mears was there from National.
And, awesome.
Yeah.
That was a great crowd, some of my favorite people. So who was the keynote?
Who was the keynote? The keynote was Scott Horton. He was talking about anti-war.
Interesting. Well, you know, that's a great topic for libertarians, because we can all, you know, a lot of times you see libertarians pose with a sign that says, I'm already against the next war. That has never been more prophetic than what's happening right now in terms of, you know, it seems like at times that we are building up a military in a rush towards war. Although what looked like it was most likely to be our war with North Korea has kind of turned around a little bit.
Right, and Steve, I mean, like, Trump replaced McMaster as an advisor with John Bolton, who is known for being very, very hawkish on foreign policy. So I like that you mentioned anti-war, because this is a tricky time to be anti-war right now.
I don't think it is. I think anti-war is something that plays with everybody all the time. Look, I'm a veteran, mm-hmm. You know, and I've worked with a lot of veterans groups, especially Face of America. And a lot of these guys have come back, and some of them have PTSD, some of them have had limbs blown off, and they're just trying to make their way, just trying to make themselves come back as human beings, you know? And we do our best to try and make them feel like they're not worthless. You know, they're still possible to be, it's still possible for them to be productive.
Yep.
And, you know, as we do this with these guys, it's heartbreaking, because, you know, you take a look at the corrupt nature of the military-industrial complex and why we are there. You know, as a veteran, we look at these people who've been sold a bill of goods, and they get sent over there to get blown apart, you know, both physically and mentally. And they come back here. These government people, they don't care.
Right.
You know, the big businesses that made a load of money off that, they don't care. They just want their profits. They want their bottom line, man.
Yeah, I understand exactly what you're saying. And, I mean, that's one of the reasons, too, that I have always been, I like to say the fact that I am pro-military, but I'm anti-war.
Is there any situation that you would not be anti-war?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I think that there are... I'm a proponent of what we call the non-aggression principle. If somebody was attacking us, you would fight back. And if they're dedicated to your destruction, you know, like, for example, when North Korea says they're going to destroy us, as far as I'm concerned, that actually is a reasonable provocation to say, you tell me you're going to destroy me, I'm going to take you at your word. I am going to prevent you from doing that. That's a reasonable justification. But if a company like, for example, China, you know, we're arguing with China right now about transit of naval vessels in the South China Sea. That's not enough of a provocation. I would be against a war over something like that. When somebody says they're going to kill you, you're allowed to act. Short of that.
Do you not think that China's being somewhat aggressive in, you know, trying to push the limits, and that it could at some point get to that level?
It could.
You know,
but I'm unlikely.
But also, I mean, military action and war are, although synonymous, are not quite the same thing.
Yeah, it's a good point. I think in terms of when I say that I am anti-war, the idea that a nation commits its entire might to fighting a battle. And Steve, I want to thank you very much for the call. The idea that a nation commits its entire force to defeating another nation, that a country is involved in a fight against a country, that seems almost ridiculous, because it's never really the entire country fighting another country. At least we haven't had a war like that. You know, maybe that's what Germany was in World War II. I mean, certainly it took the resources of our entire country to fight against them. On the other hand, now I haven't seen many situations in which I would say I would support a war. I mean, honestly, when we talked about the Russians' invasion of Crimea, that's not a situation where I would support the United States going to war, but I certainly could see Ukraine wanting to go to war over that. That seems reasonable to me. They chose not to because Russia would crush them. And then, you know, we're left with sort of an interesting dilemma. How do we respond in that situation? There are some situations in which I would say, you know, there are countries that we consider our allies that we are so close to that we would fight with them willingly. In the same way that, I mean, if somebody invaded Florida, I would think that Georgia, the United States, would be involved in the response because we're all part of the United States. We have a historically close alliance with the United Kingdom. I would think that if we were in a war, they would help us. If they were in a war, we would help them, assuming that it wasn't, you know, our relationship stayed the same.
Yeah, I just find the term anti-war is sort of like, I mean, what it just sort of in my head, it just means you never want war, you will never go to war, you will never do anything, which is why I was questioning it. And that's, I mean,
I wouldn't.
Yeah. And then people always talk about the people that are for wars, if they're just making a bunch of money off it. And surely there sort of are, but I think it's sort of.
Like, for example, I don't know that I would say that invading Iraq would be under my idea of what is a justified situation to engage in war. In fact, I would specifically say it's probably not. I think that we had other alternatives, something that didn't involve. And I mean, here's the truth about the Iraq War, right? The Iraq War was never about Saddam Hussein, and it was never about going to war with Iraq. It was about the war on terror. The United States had been attacked, and they didn't want to have another battle. The first rule of warfare is you never fight it on your own soil. So instead of the United States fighting the war on terror in the United States, where the terrorists were attacking us, they said, let's put the army, who's a hard target, instead of our cities, which are soft targets, in the sight of the terrorists. The easiest way to put our army in the sight of the terrorists is to put them overseas. So we invaded Iraq. We invaded Afghanistan. We invaded Iraq. And then the army took every shot that really the combined terroristic might of the world could throw at them. And the terrorists were broken on the rock that is the United States Army. At a terrible cost to the army, at a terrible cost to our soldiers, and at a tremendously terrible cost to the Iraqi people. But that was always the strategy. That was the war that they were fighting. We weren't at war with Iraq. We were trying to minimize casualties from what looked to be a terrorist attack that were starting to affect the United States.
I've never heard this sort of theory on that. I've never heard that.
It's the kind of theory that if you think about it, I mean, I hope that it makes some sense to you at this point in time.
Well, lots of things make sense in that sort of, I mean, I don't know. I didn't want to get in the whole war conversation tonight, but.
Well, that's fine. I mean, it is fundamentally, my feelings about anti-war are that the level of casualties.
But I think, my point is to say you're already against the next war.
Yeah.
That to me says something that is like, I will never fight for anything. Because at some point fighting, like if you disagree with something, if something like, you know, if someone is being aggressive, so you're right. Just like, well, I'm already against the next war. So, I mean, if the war hops up, I'm against it. Doesn't matter what that war is. You're sort of preemptively saying, I'm never going to be for that. And that's what it sort of brings up.
You could be against a war, but still willing to fight. You could say, I wish that it didn't come to this.
Well, I don't think Iraq was technically a war, was it?
No, I don't even think it was a police action. Certainly, there was never a declaration of war, right? I don't think we declared war against anybody except for... we did have authorization from Congress to invade Afghanistan.
Yes.
But other than that, right, we haven't declared war against anybody in quite a long time.
Semantical, but yet...
It is. All right. We're going to do one more quick topic on today's news before we go into the big stuff. So, you know, there was the big... March for Our Lives downtown, not just downtown here, they had Washington, New York, Los Angeles, and actually
was there? I didn't hear anything about it on any sort of news outlets.
Essentially, it was a march saying that guns are bad, that kids have a political will all of their own, not being led by their political masters, and they want to get rid of guns. Now, if you are super cynical, you might say this is just the latest tactic in a gun control movement that has failed after almost every other, after Sandy Hook, after Las Vegas, after other gun incidences, and this is the latest tactic for them to sort of use the children to bring the message in. And something that we've said on the show a lot is that think of the children is always a precursor to somebody losing their rights. Now, I appreciate the idea that these students who've experienced this tragedy want to change things. And they should. They should want to change things. The idea that somebody can come into a school and kill 17 people, that's wrong. We don't want that to happen in our society.
No.
But interestingly enough, they proposed at the school, whose name Mary Douglas, whatever.
Marjorie Stoneman.
Marjorie Stoneman, thank you. They proposed Stoneman. At the school that one of the safety measures they were going to take is that all the students were going to be required to use clear backpacks. And one of the speakers of the movement said, that's ridiculous. That's such an incredible invasion of our privacy, such a loss of our right to privacy, that we would have to use clear backpacks. And the irony of somebody saying, you're taking away my rights, but doesn't see that.
I get to take away your rights, but you can't take away mine.
Exactly. And that's
the biggest problem is no one's being taught today that the Second Amendment is a civil right, right? Because then you could call this march a march against civil rights.
Well, you know, we had, Ken, you made an outstanding point earlier, and sometimes I think that we should do a pre-show when we get together and we just mic ourselves up in the bar that we go to beforehand.
I swear a lot more out there, though.
You do swear a lot more, but, you know, maybe if we did it there, the Stockyard would
infinitely
give us,
more times than you do in this show.
That's exactly. Way too hot for radio.
Which could also be zero.
Way too hot for radio. Well, maybe so. Maybe not too hot for the podcast that you should be listening to. Every day they go up at www.libertyontheair.com. So
iTunes, Google Play.
iTunes, Google Play, absolutely. You know, we got a large audience outside of this. And, of course, we're always on Facebook Live as well, although the show is relatively clean on Facebook Live and on the podcast. All that being said, Ken made an outstanding point because, you know, sometimes you'll hear people say, well, you know, the Second Amendment was written in the days of muskets, and therefore it doesn't apply. And Ken, your brilliant observation was...
Yeah, well, this actually came as a response to a Facebook comment where the Facebooker made the mention that the Second Amendment is essentially an 18th century text for 21st century weapons.
Right.
And my rebuttal to that was immediately, well, I mean, you look at the First Amendment, that's 18th century text for 21st century technology. Obviously, the First Amendment doesn't apply to the internet, right? There's no way it could apply to that.
And as far as I'm concerned, that is as close as a slam dunk in a political argument that you're ever going to get. Liberty on the Air, back with you, talking.
Matt, could you play some
in. It's
bed music for us?
7. That's good. I like it. This is my crack staff. Yeah. Improvising the bumper music since we didn't have
You couldn't tell us making those sounds with my voice.
Sorry.
That's all right.
No, sorry.
That's fine. Actually, that's what I want. John, we're going to go back and we're going to take that clip of you going, sorry, sorry, sorry. I want that to be the bumper coming out of the
Stark race. Charlie Rose style.
That's fine.
Re-entry.
So people want to call in 617-266-6868.
Better than the Bill O'Reilly guy.
We got the Facebook chat going on. We got all sorts of exciting stuff happen. And we're going to change the topic up a little bit. We're going to talk about a couple pieces of legislation that have gone through. First one I want to talk about a little bit. Actually, I'm going to throw it up. You guys want to talk about the omnibus? You want to talk about FOSTA first?
Well, I'm fired up about FOSTA.
Are those two dinner entree options?
They are. What are the sides with
those? Oh, the flambé FOSTA.
Yeah, well, they're right. The bananas FOSTA?
I think we start FOSTA.
All right. Right.
Because I feel like I'm, well, personally, more to say about the omnibus, but...
All right, so let's start FOSTA. So the Senate just passed, in my opinion, one of the worst bills in recent memory. It's the Allow States and Victims to Fight Online Sex Trafficking Act. And Fight Online Sex Trafficking Act is the FOSTA part. Now,
so you're for or against this bill, Dan?
I am against this
bill. So you're against fighting sex trafficking. Dan, you are a horrible person.
Well, it's an interesting thing because, you know, is the right way to fight sex trafficking to kill all the people who are involved in it.
That's the Trump way?
The problem is that some of those people are victims. Right?
Yeah, it's collateral damage.
Right? Are you saying the bill kills people?
I'm saying that...
Now the movie's Kill Bill. Sorry.
I'm saying that this bill, okay, really what this bill does is there's a law that actually was passed a long time ago called Section 230. And essentially that it actually predates the internet. It essentially says that if you're a publisher but you accept content from other people, you aren't really responsible for what they put up, because if the volume is such that you can't see everything in there. So for example, if you're a newspaper and you're publishing classified ads and people put up classified ads that, and this used to happen all the time, that were essentially ads for prostitution.
What?
The newspaper wasn't specifically responsible for them because they couldn't censor all those ads. And honestly, it's not necessarily their job to censor what other people post.
Yeah, they're not responsible.
Right. And so this has been passed on to the internet. So, you know, Craigslist actually was originally meant to be specifically classified ads online. Even today, their minimalist format is meant to be evocative of what classified ads used to look like in the newspapers. Now, evocative for whom? I don't know, because most of the people using the internet have never seen classified ad in a newspaper anymore. But these ads, Craigslist was... We had a case actually here in Boston, the Craigslist killer.
Yes.
Where there was a man who answered ads on Craigslist of women who were engaged in prostitution. And they came to his room and he killed them. I believe that he started off robbing them. And then he moved up to murder. And people had such an outroar. They're like, oh my God, I can't believe that prostitution is happening. I believe it was at the... maybe I shouldn't say the name of the hotel.
Especially if you don't know, it doesn't really matter.
Exactly. But it was at a classy hotel in Boston. And people were so upset that Craigslist said, you know what? We're going to stop running these ads anymore. We're not going to have...
They had like a services or something. I mean, they have a lot of different things. You can buy... They have, you know, different sections for jobs, people looking for work, people for, you know, looking for apartments.
I found my current job under the computer gigs.
Yeah, they have a gig section that you can also buy. They have a free section of like people who are giving away like an old TV or an old stereo or just whatever they're giving away. There's a plenty of stuff on there, but they also have like a personal section.
Yeah.
And I think under there might have been, I don't know if it was called services because that sounds pretty blatant.
But well, my understanding is that, and I don't remember exactly. Craigslist had a...
I'll have to check my internet history.
Exactly.
It was called Adult Services.
Adult Services.
Oh, that was close. That was close.
Yeah.
So once Craigslist got rid of that, then Backpages, they're the new...
But they didn't get away with it. They still had personal sections. They still had like casual encounters. They still had other things that were for... Well, I mean, but those were ostensibly for just...
Right. It was essentially Tinder. Tinder, Grindr,
to some extent, but this is things, but this is the part of the. But I mean, there is definitely some still thinly veiled prostitution going on there.
Yeah.
But they have stopped that section.
Right, they got rid of it.
Ended it.
Except they ended it, and Backpages is
no. It up. They literally just closed. And I hate the word literally, and I just used it. They figuratively ended.
Yes.
The other day, they shut down their personal section.
So they didn't end it.
No, wait.
Craigslist had a personal section for casual encounters.
They still have women for men
for
women.
No, that's gone.
What?
I don't know about that, really.
Yeah, that's gone. Go look it up right now.
Dan's concerned because he had a post that
Dan, actually, go look it up on your computer and read what they say. This is the interesting part. And this is why the story is sort of interesting to me. I mean, mm-hmm. never been a patron of those things, but I did know it existed. But from what I understood, those were just two consenting adults that were not exchanging anything except possibly some bodily fluids.
Yeah, you just put the website to your lips, right?
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, I didn't inhale, to speak.
Holy,
so what does
holy
it say, Dan?
Smoke. So I'm going to read this out loud. I am shocked.
That's why
by
I
this.
Sent you there.
So I went to... Yeah,
by the way, by side note,
yes.
like we were
I
talking
casual
about...
casual encounters.
In our
click through.
Pre-story stuff, Yep. Like pre-show stuff, we were talking about what we're going to do. Like, we actually talked about this, and you never, like, you went off a completely different thing. This is, to me, is the interesting part. But anyway, go.
So it, read aloud, I recommend
you
anybody
are, you are now a professional Craigslist reader.
Yeah, so Craigslist, yeah, I am the, exactly.
The first one ever.
Matt reads the Constitution, I read Craigslist.
I cannot believe this.
Exactly, so this is what it says. If you go to www.craigslist.org, you'll go to your regular city, click through to Women Seeking Men, Men Seeking Women, which used to be honest-to-goodness dating sites. Craigslist has posted, the U.S. Congress just passed H.R. 1865 FOSTA, seeking to subject websites to criminal and civil liability when third parties, users, misuse online personals unlawfully. Any tool or service can be misused. We can't take such risk without jeopardizing all our other services, so we are regretfully taking Craigslist personals offline. Hopefully, we can bring them back someday. To the millions of spouses, partners and couples who met through Craigslist, we wish you every happiness.
I had spent a significant chunk of my 20s on these pages, and my heart has been gutted out of
me. And you didn't, John, you didn't know about that had been shut down?
I didn't understand that either.
I mean, I don't use it that much anymore, not to hate on it, but like, I this is the thing, is like, right after, not even 24 hours after they passed this bill, Reddit shut down several subreddits that were related to sex, the sex trade, sex workers. There was a hookers page that was kind of tasteless, but still a little bit useful for sex workers.
Well, that makes sense to me, at least. I mean, if they're actually about charging for sex, which is still illegal,
there could be wider ramifications. Like, as far as I know, there's a website that's called, I think it's Discreet Arrangements or something, that's for individuals to find sugar daddies,
yep,
sugar mamas.
I think there actually is, like, sugardaddies.com is a website as well
that could be shut down.
Yeah,
any number of things.
But I mean, what about I think, I don't know for sure, but I understand that on Tinder and on Grindr, there are people who put certain symbols in their photos that indicate that they are actually there for money.
Yeah, now, I mean, there's a couple of things about this conversation.
Yep.
There's a couple of different levels. Now, one, casual encounters. I am sure that some people were sort of thinly veiled prostitution.
Sure.
I have no idea how much of that, and people who are sort of willingly involved in it, that is sort of a separate topic, if you're consenting to it. But if you are not consenting to be someone who is, someone who is trafficked for sex, that to me is something that I would think that libertarians would be fighting very hardly to protect those people, because it's their, you know, and not get angry about other sex workers or other jobs. There's also and I don't know how much, I honestly have no idea how much sex work sort of goes, sex trafficking goes either, on.
But here's the other thing.
But these people are just protecting themselves because someone can sue them.
Right, exactly. And the real problem with it is that this doesn't address the issue at all. The idea that a law in the United States is going to stop something on the internet from being published is completely ludicrous. In fact, it seems to me that there's a tremendous opportunity right now to set up a service for Americans seeking, adult services based in Dubai or...
Yeah, I imagine Facebook is next that's going to crack down, because I'm sure Zuckerberg is trying to stay out of all this. I would have to imagine there's plenty of Facebook groups, pages, that would fall into this category that are about to get squashed.
That's 100% true.
But I mean, my other question is sort of just from a, you know, sort of a legal philosophical standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
So we're holding a third party. So if I had a car that was stolen,
right,
and someone sold it on Craigslist,
yeah,
should I be able to sue Craigslist? Because they helped
in the commission of a crime.
They were helped in the commission. Yeah, do they have to check that stuff out?
No, I mean, it's a crazy question. So full disclosure, I have a friend who is in the sex trade in Boston, and she was talking about the fact that recently they moved away from text based ads to pictures with words in them, because that was easier to get past screening things. The technology is always one of warhead and armor. You know, whatever rules you're going to make to try to block this, people are going to find a way to get around it. I mean, they used to publish them in newspapers. Now they're publishing them online. They're going to find some way around this. The idea that, you know, this law is going to make things better.
But I think the law was also there so the survivors of those things could hold someone responsible. And it allows them to sue someone that was... I guess if someone kidnaps you and
right.
forces you to sell your body to a bunch of people and you get freed,
But to use your argument again, somebody kidnaps you in the back of a white Ford van. Can you sue Ford because they made that terrible van that makes kidnapping so easily?
Of course, you can sue the Ford.
Right, you just shouldn't win.
Your prospects of winning, but this is different. This is making someone criminally liable. This is different than being possibly liable in a civil suit.
Right. Right. All right. So we got Paul calling in from Woburn about FOSTA. Paul, what do you know?
What I know is that after Craigslist went down because of Craigslist killer, Backpage took over, and actually there was a murder that took place in Burlington, and because this was a black escort who was killed by black men, it didn't get the same attention. And Backpage has been brought to court, and they got high-priced attorneys. Now, I wouldn't legalize prostitution, but I also would keep it decriminalized, much like marijuana, if, in fact, you have two consenting adults. So when you have people like Mara Haley and all these other politicians who grandstand and claim that, you know, sex trafficking of underage children is so prevalent, it does take place, but to be honest with you, with the internet, it has made prostitution more safer for women now.
Hey, Paul, what do you think is the difference between decriminalization and legalization? What are you saying there?
In other words, if you're the state police, you have your own problems trying to fight off the corruption within your own department. So what you want to do? We want to prioritize. What do we want to prioritize? We want to prioritize violence. Okay, it's murder, rapes. Usually, things that go along with the drug trade, which is money. So you don't really hear about a lot of prostitutes actually getting beat up if, in fact, they're advertising on erotic reviews. They actually go into a hotel with a credit card. They actually see professional people. They actually screen the people who come to see them so they already know who they are. The problem is when pimps get involved and there's underage girls, then I think some of the responsibility definitely would go on Backpage in that you're advertising, you're taking money from somebody, and there's an underage girl, whether she's 13, 14, 15, 16, whatever her age is, and she's being abducted by an adult who's actually putting her in a hotel room. He's getting the room. He's driving around the country.
But clearly what he's doing is illegal. The question that we're asking is, how could Craigslist know this? How can Craigslist distinguish between an ad?
I have heard that Backpage...
Craigslist is per se now.
Sorry, Backpage.
So yeah. Backpage took over. And the way you know it, you have responsibility as a business person. In other words, if I'm going to put up an ad through Backpage, okay?
Yep.
I have an escort, okay? She's at the Marriott in Burlington.
Right.
Okay? I'm advertising through them. You are not the Boston Phoenix with Mindic. You have some responsibility.
Right.
To find out, who's the person giving me the money? And is that girl 16 or 26? Do you understand what I'm saying?
Backpage can't
accessory,
do that.
Like I said, I honestly think the sex trafficking, mostly in my opinion, and it's just a humble opinion, it's not through personal experience, I think it has a lot to do with Asian and Hispanic girls.
Well, yeah, I honestly have no idea, but I have heard that Backpage...
Right. And thank you very much for the call, Paul.
I have heard that one of the reasons this law was sort of... people wanted it was because Backpage had been alerted to ads that said, this is about sex trafficking, you need to take this stuff down, and Backpage was like, no... So that's, that adds another different wrinkle. I mean, it's one thing to say that, I have no idea, but if someone comes to your attention, brings to your attention that, hey, you're selling a stolen motorcycle, you're selling a stolen car.
But to go off what Paul is saying, if you want to prevent underaged individuals who are engaging in this activity, if prostitution was legal and Backpage could actually vet the people that were offering these services and require some kind of identification,
licensing,
and these people wouldn't be threatened with jail by advertising that they are actually providing these services, you could actually filter out people who are illegally.
So interestingly enough, so I went to Backpage while we're sitting here looking, and
Sure. First on your favorites bar?
It was not on my favorites bar, as it turns out. I didn't know this, but Backpage, it's like nationwide. And so
you So it's on your side?
You go. It is. You go to one thing, and then you have to drill into your state. And then you have to drill into your city. But
well, that's what they want you to do.
Yes, exactly right.
I think you just found their new marketing slogan.
Yeah, drill into your city with Backpage.
Drill into your city next.
But sure enough, it's not very hard to find. Under Women Seeking Men, there are well over 100 posts for today. As far as I can tell, none of them have any words in them. They only have pictures, which are...
It's like a McDonald's menu.
Yeah.
Well, it's tougher to search. So if you're giving a phone number...
Right,
if you're all giving, have phone if you're saying something like that, it's tougher to search for that sort of stuff.
Yep, no, exactly right.
And an image, but that does... I mean, and I think that there is a difference between... it's still illegal, but a different...
Yes.
You know, different part of, you know, if you're choosing of your own volition to engage in that sort of work, that's sort of fine. So
is it illegal if you film it?
Pornography is protected by the First Amendment.
If I pay the two of you and I sell it online, it's perfectly legal.
So here's the funniest thing. At the bottom of the page, there's an RSS feed. So you could hook up.
Stay updated.
Exactly. And get all these updates real life as somebody posts an ad.
Well, if you're going to write a bot to, you know, scrub it for data.
I love the fact that you know, the technology is there. Here's the real issue, though. If you are a person who creates a publishing platform, which is what the internet is, right? Your YouTube.
Like Facebook.
Facebook.
And you let Russia, you know, take control of the election.
Right, quote unquote. Exactly. Right. But so.
Because a lot of people want to hold Facebook accountable for quote unquote Russia involvement in the presidential election.
Right, which is really because people want to wash their hands of the fact I'm a stupid voter.
That people are dumb and influenced by ads on Facebook?
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, that's the problem. People want to pretend like, oh yeah, we're totally an informed democracy.
Oh, no, we need the government to protect us from really dumb and fake ads.
Right. And in reality, when that happens, when the government starts doing that, that's censorship. Clearly. If the government is going to say, you know, we're going to make sure that there are no ads, that you have to police it. So first of all, it's not even government censorship. It's government requiring private citizens to censor other private citizens' speech.
Well, you see how strong this wave is right now, is that government hasn't prosecuted anybody, but just the mere threat is causing all these different private entities to lock down their platforms because of that.
I just have a question.
Backpage just hasn't done it yet.
Do you think that sex trafficking is an issue? And what do you think?
There's no question that there is an issue with trafficking.
Because I don't want to make light of the fact that this is a...
But how do we drill down on that issue when actual sex trafficking is conflated with sex work?
Exactly.
So the idea would be to somehow separate that so we can focus on the actual issue.
Exactly.
I think you guys are focusing too much on those two things. And I think you're letting one issue, and I find it fascinating for people who talk so much about liberty and people's freedom, I think you're focusing so much on a conflation because you don't like what people are saying about
sex
work. And then...
You can't see the other issue without legalizing sex work.
But by doing something, you're sort of really ignoring and marginalizing a group of people who have so much liberty taken from them. And I find so little empathy for those people in some of these conversations I've had with you guys.
Just the opposite. We are the only ones who are actually advocating a solution because all these solutions don't make any difference at all.
They push it darker into the black market.
Exactly.
But I haven't heard you talk about it.
It's better now than it's ever been. Because of the fact that so many people feel like they are able to work, and so many professional working girls.
Yeah, but all you're talking about is the people you know who do sex work, who want to sell their own sex. What you're not talking about is the people who are forced into it. And that's what this bill is trying to protect some of them. And in the conversation, you've sort of pushed them to the side.
Well, of course, this bill will push them to the side
and say it's going to do nothing. And then all of a sudden, let's just talk about these other people who should do something.
This bill will do absolutely nothing.
But do you want to protect those people? And how could you protect those people besides going,
the easiest way to protect them is to legalize it. The problem is always that in a black market.
Be careful what you said. I mean, no, you're not legalizing.
The way to prevent it is to do actual police work and find people that are making people do things against their will and putting them in jail. Right. You know, actual police work. That's the way to do it. You can't right. pass a law. It will not do anything. You need to do is arrest people.
You
that
can't
are doing
do police work without any laws, though.
No, what they're doing is illegal.
Yeah,
slavery is
illegal.
Currently illegal.
It's already
forcing
illegal.
Somebody to work for you is illegal. The problem is, I mean, it's like, did prohibition stop alcohol? Did prohibition stop cannabis? Prohibiting sex work actually makes it more difficult to find out the people who are committing these real crimes, because we see so many fake crimes that are easier, that are more, that are, you know, I have no idea what the statistics are, but just based on the advertisements that I'm seeing on
just
this
make
webpage,
them up like Democrats.
Yeah, all right, I'll make them up. Yeah, we're in Massachusetts. We can make up any statistics. Just looking at this page, it seems to me that there is a tremendous amount of prostitution going on in Boston. Sure, I cannot imagine that most of that, that even a small percentage of that, is by people who are unwilling, who are being controlled in the trade. I would, however, actually encourage the police to contact these people and find out what's actually going on. The problem is that with prostitution itself being illegal, every person that they contact is committing a crime. However, if they just contacted the people and they're only looking for the people who are trapped, who are in the trafficking industry, who are... and, you know, sometimes the police actually do make arrests in this. There have been a couple in Massachusetts relatively recently.
They shut down a hotel because there was a bunch of sex trafficking workers there.
Yep. And there was a ship that came in with women who had been shipped in from China who were specifically were coming in for that. There certainly have been successes in the field. But the keeping of keeping prostitution illegal makes it much more difficult to find the real crime that's happening, which is slavery and sex trafficking. There was a tremendous story. I don't remember which state it is, but there's a state that trains their state troopers how to find victims of sex trafficking. And one of the things that they do is they learn that there are certain symbols, certain signs, when they see couples traveling together, to separate the man and the woman, to talk to them, to ask, especially if it's a young girl, you know, who's this person you're with? You know, let me see your identifications. If the identifications don't match, ask them other questions. See if, you know, this person is actually being transported.
So ask to see their papers?
Well, in this case, they can't ask to see their papers for no reason. So these are all these people that they've stopped for traffic stops, and they can ask the driver to see his identification, and then they can ask the young woman to see her identification. She doesn't have to reveal it. You're 100% right. But in those situations, being able to investigate helps. When the crime is masked by a million other things, you know, if we say all prostitution is illegal, it makes it very difficult to get into the situations in which there actually is a lot of sex trafficking. If we really want to solve the problem, let's start investigating all the prostitutes who are online, but we don't have the resource. We clearly don't have the resources to arrest them all, because right now it's happening. Right, prostitution is illegal in Massachusetts, but I'm looking online right now, and there seems to be, I don't know, 200 ads in Boston. The police could call all those numbers, go and arrest all those people right now, but they're not doing that. The reason they're not doing it is because either they don't think it's a crime, or they don't think they have the ability to do it.
Yeah.
The fundamental answer is to get government out of policing non-crimes and get them to actually chasing real crimes. Slavery is a real crime. Human trafficking is a real crime. Selling something that you can give away for free is never going to be a crime. You can always look us up at www.libertyontheair.com.
Good night, Skippy. We missed you.